We have the Clean Water Coalition versus the M Resort, State of Nevada et al. If parties are ready to go forward, please begin. Let us know if you wish to reserve any time.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Michael Keeley. I represent the Clean Water Coalition. This case is a consolidation of two litigations in the lower court, and the M Resort and the Clean Water Coalition's interests align on some issues, but not all. And we are requesting the court, if the court will allow us, 15 minutes per party rather than 15 minutes.
Counsel,
per
party. No. We've read the submitted materials. If you would get to the specific points and tell us what we need to know, we would appreciate it. Please go forward.
Yes, Your Honor. Then I would like to have 10 minutes for the Clean Water Coalition and reserve 5 minutes for the M Resort. Your Honor, we will not address standing. It was not briefed. It was not contested in the lower court. Unless this court wants to hear about standing, I'll go ahead and move on. But if the court does want to hear about standing.
Anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Your Honor. We start with the acknowledgement that the Constitution of the State of Nevada is supreme in this case, that it's supreme to the powers of the legislature, to the powers of the executive, and to the powers of this court, because this court, the legislature, and the executive office derives its power from the Constitution. And that supremacy stays intact regardless of whether or not the context of the case involves the legislature and a political subdivision. Now, Article 4, Section 21 of the Constitution, that requires laws be general and that they be uniform, does not contain an exemption for the legislature or a law when the context involves a political subdivision. There are two cases that illustrate that point with the language. First is the City of Reno versus Stoddard, and the particular language of the court is, and I quote, subject, of course, to constitutional limitations. That it goes on to say that the tax revenues of a city raised for one purpose may be applied to another purpose of that particular city. The other case is the County of Pershing versus District Court. And in that case, the beginning phrase is, unless a limitation exists in the Constitution of a state. It goes on to say that the power of the legislature over political subdivision is otherwise absolute. So we do believe that that is the only place where the lower court erred in this case, in that it found all of the components necessary to declare this a special law and an unconstitutional tax, but then it took into consideration the fact that one side is the legislature and the other is a political subdivision, and therefore that overrode, and we believe that the court elevated that fact over and above the Constitution itself. We believe the court should have started with the Constitution. That Constitution, Article 4, Section 1, again, it requires that there be general laws and only allows special or local laws where a general law cannot be made applicable. That has been taken to the point to where they recognize exceptions, emergency exceptions, and what's been called the natural resource exception, but none of those exceptions apply in this case.
Whose emergency does it have to be? Is it the local government or the state?
I'm sorry?
Is the emergency that of the state or is it of the local government?
You know, the federal court addressed that in Gypsum Resources versus Masto and said that emergencies deal with a particular need, particular location. I don't want to misstate that particular. Quote, it says, emergencies have been limited to natural disasters, unforeseen accidents, and pressing human needs. Virtually all of the emergency exceptions that have been recognized by this court deal with a situation, a particular locality that needs a particular law that cannot be addressed by a general law. And so when they enacted the law, it always benefited the particular locality and the target of that legislation. This legislation does exactly the opposite. It targets one entity, the CWC. It names the CWC, and it takes the money that the CWC has and that's been paid only by a small subset of Nevada residents. However, it spreads it all over the four corners of the state. So they are disproportionately taxed and paying for the general welfare of the entire state. There is no case in Nevada. The state has cited no case from any other jurisdiction where an emergency or any type of an exception to a special law comes anywhere close to the circumstances of this case. And the state made the argument that this is not a special law, it's actually a general law, but the legislation itself acknowledges that it's a special law because the legislation says that special circumstances prohibit them from being able to enact a general law in this case. So they pretty much admit it's a special law, so the question is, could a general law have been made applicable? Now, I'll also note that in the Washoe County, the City of Reno versus Washoe County case, the district court relied on the fact that the legislature, in enacting a special law, made numerous findings to support the fact that a special law did, and the district court relied upon that. There is no record in this case. There are no findings. This was done in a very rushed fashion because it was a special session. And the only legislative history that exists on video or otherwise is Senator Coffin referring to this as a money grab, that it's low-hanging fruit and we're going to grab it, so that really the exigency of this is that the state needs money and that the CWC has money. And so that is the basis upon which this law got enacted. It doesn't address any special local need. It doesn't fit with any exception whatsoever.
Well, on that point, Mr. Keeley, it's kind of interesting that these sections come to our state's constitution by way of Indiana.
Indiana?
Mm-hmm. I had some time to read the Constitutional Convention delegate notes preparing for this oral argument. There's actually a number of states that have adopted these provisions, but do you know of any jurisdiction except Nevada that has used terms like special circumstances or emergencies to provide exceptions to Section 21?
I do not. And those terms are very vague. Special circumstances are very vague. I would submit,
in our jurisprudence, going back to the early or mid-1800s after the Constitution was enacted, what is the basis for creating special circumstances or emergencies in the cases of this court?
The only basis that I've been able to see is that they conclude that it is a situation where a general law could not be applied. And so they've carved out what they've termed exceptions, but they really fit under the scenario of when a general law could not be applied. So when the courthouse burns down, they have to move the county seat. They have to enact the law to move the county seat. They have to do so expeditiously, and a general law couldn't possibly be applicable. But certainly raising revenue and balancing the budget for a state is not a special concern. It's not something unique.
Well, Mr. Keeley, haven't all of the cases in which this court has referred to the special circumstance, such as bonding courthouses or trying to deal with lawlessness in Lander County in the late 1800s, focused on the special circumstance of the entity or the county rather than the state?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's targeted a specific need, even going to the Lake Tahoe case dealing with List versus Douglas County. Even though it was of a regional concern, it still targeted the preservation of that resource. Every case that's been deemed an emergency or a special circumstance has involved law that benefits and addresses that particular need, that scenario. It hasn't gone beyond that.
And well, you indicated that, I mean, I understand there's a statement in the statute that seems to suggest that the legislature's acknowledgement that it couldn't adopt a general law to cover this situation. But that isn't really necessarily the test. The test in Evans is whether they could have. So Mr. Powers asks us to disregard the legislature's statement on this point, which I thought was a rather unusual request. that we ignore some section of the legislature's statement. But notwithstanding, what if the legislature had passed a statute that said that all entities, all sewer assessment entities in the state, all water companies in the state, formed with interlocal agreements and who have surplus cash must turn it over to the state general fund? Would that be a general law that would satisfy Section 21?
I think that you could enact a law. I don't know, phrased as you phrase it, I think you can enact a law that classifies rather than specifies and therefore creates a classification, and it applies uniformly across the state to anyone fitting within that classification, assuming you can properly define surplus.
So notwithstanding the legislature's statement in the bill itself that it could not have adopted a general law, you would concede that a law, maybe not articulated as I should, that would provide for sweeps of surplus funds from any entity in the state created out of a local agreement would pass Section or Article 20 or Article 4, Section 21?
Yes, because we are then treated uniformly and equally with other jurisdictions.
Okay. Isn't the test in Evans that if it is, notwithstanding the statement by the legislature in this legislation, if they could do it, then it satisfies constitutional muster?
No.
Why not? Why does this violate the test in Evans?
Because a general law can be made applicable, and they didn't enact a general law, and special laws are prohibited when they can make a general law applicable. And so they would have to do that. And then if they do that and they're seeking $62 million, if you've got five or six political subdivisions, they may not need $62 million from us. They may be able to get, we may only have to pay 10. We'll pay our fair share. Law must be uniform. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm over my time, unless the court has other questions.
Honorable Justices of the Nevada Supreme Court, Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Jason Woodbury. I'm with the law firm Kemper, Kroll, Renshaw, Gronauer, and Fiorentino. We represent the M Resort as the plaintiff in one of the consolidated cases in this matter. And we also represent several similarly situated interests from Clark County in the case below. If it pleases the Court, I would like to start at the end of this case by first discussing the result which this legislation accomplishes. There is no dispute in this case that the money that is at issue was paid solely and exclusively by residents of the Las Vegas Valley and by business interests with brick-and-mortar business operations in the Las Vegas Valley. No other person, no other business in the entire state of Nevada was asked or compelled to pay these funds, which are the subject of this appeal. The result of AB 6 is that it takes these funds, and contributed by this subset of Nevadans, and it transfers those funds into the state general fund, which is a generalized fund to be expended for the generalized benefit of all Nevada citizens. I submit to the Court that there can be no question that the state could not have accomplished this result directly. That is to say, it could not enact a law that said, that designated people or businesses by name, not by classification, not because they belong to a group, but because they are that person or they are that business interest, and taken that money from that subset and put it into the general fund.
Now, Mr. Woodbury, let's say that the law had taken the money from the Clean Water Coalition and put it into, let's say, the Clark County Fire Protection or something within Clark County, and it wasn't transferred out of Clark County, but it was for a totally different purpose. Would the legislature have the power to pass that kind of law?
I don't know the answer to that question, Justice Gibbons, but you, the point you raise is this. We're dealing with a two-dimensional issue here. In other words, we're not taking funds from designated for one special purpose and moving it to a different special purpose, but that generally serves all the same people, such as your example. What we are doing is we're taking local special funds and moving it not just to a general purpose, but moving it to a state general purpose for the benefit of people who haven't paid anything. Justice Gibbons, I would say that your question is a closer question, to be sure, but it's not a question that we have looked into. There is case law in Nevada and elsewhere that has been cited extensively in the briefs that do allow that under some circumstances, that do say under some circumstances you are permitted to take local special funds and move them to a local general fund. But there is no case. There is no case in Nevada. There is no case that the state has cited that says that you can take local special money and you can move it to a state general fund.
So I assume your position is that the state can only take, like, sales tax, property tax, or some general tax that everybody pays, take a local portion and transfer it to the state. That they can do because it's uniform statewide, but they can't take specialized funds.
However they want to do it to make it uniform statewide, I think Justice Hardesty's point is a good one. If they would have taken all joint powers authorities funds and applied a uniform law, perhaps that would have been okay, but that is certainly not what they did in this case. That is certainly contrary to the holding of the most important case in this appeal, which is Boyd. And with that, I believe my time is up. I thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Kevin Powers with the Legislative Council Bureau representing the Nevada Legislature. With me today is Blake Doerr from the Attorney General's Office, who represents the State Controller, the State Treasurer, and the Governor. I will be presenting all of the argument for the state this afternoon. The important question, certainly, that was brought up in the preliminary part of the argument was dealing with Article 4, Section 21. And I want to address that, that important argument. However, the starting point, I think, is we have to focus on the fact that this case is not about taxation. These funds collected by the CWC and its member agencies were not derived through local taxation. They were collected under specific statutory and charter authority that allowed each member agency to impose utility charges for utility services. They were collecting reasonable utility charges. There's a wide birth of case law that shows that when you collect reasonable utility charges, that property is the property of the municipality. There is no constitutionally protected interest in that money for the utility customer. They pay the money, they get the service, and they no longer have any rights in that money. Because the money collected by the municipal utility is the municipal utility's property, the state may take that property because all property of political subdivisions is subject to the sovereign control of the state.
Didn't the Hawaii Supreme Court reject that argument, Mr. Powers, when the legislature recast the revenue collected in that case and swept it to the state general fund? The Hawaii Supreme Court said in that instance it converted those fees to taxes.
That case is different because it involves regulatory fees. In the Wingle case itself, the court specifically noted that it was not dealing with a utility or service charge. It emphasized that it was dealing with a regulatory fee. A regulatory fee.
What's the difference? I'm not sure I understand the difference between. I hear what you're saying.
There is a subtle nuanced difference, but there is an important difference that the law recognizes. A regulatory fee is a fee the government imposes on a regulated business or organization to pay for the government's cost of regulating that organization. In the Lingle case, the insurance division of Hawaii was imposing a regulatory fee on the insurance companies to pay for the insurance division's regulation of those companies, processing applications, reviewing rate changes. Those are the regulatory fees that the insurance division was imposing. The key is, under most case law, regulatory fees can't exceed the cost of providing the service. The difference with reasonable utility charges is that municipal utilities may impose a charge that exceeds the cost of providing the service. They may generate a reasonable surplus. There's a big difference between the two. In this case, what is missing
from... How can we determine that in this case? The coalition never got off the ground to do the project and start sinking whatever they were going to sink in the bottom of Lake Mead. So it's very unclear whether how these fees would relate to the operational characteristics of the operation.
These fees are no different than the capital component that's included in all utility fees. Whether you're paying Nevada Power or Southwest Gas as private companies for utility, part of your utility fee that you pay is for capital construction. This was just an additional capital construction part of that utility fee. Now, the capital project's not going to go forward. They're not going to build the scope project. It's excess revenue, but you're allowed to collect excess revenue as a local governmental utility. But because those local government utilities are subject to the sovereign control of the state and their property is subject to that sovereign control, the state may take that utility money.
And so in your view, if the Sun Valley Water Company in Reno, Nevada, is accumulating funds to replace its water infrastructure, but before it gets the chance to apply those funds to that purpose, the state can sweep those funds as part of the state general fund.
If it is a public entity, a political subdivision of the state can do that. Now, that would be a bad policy decision, possibly, but it would be a policy decision. And that's what we're boiling down here, is a policy decision.
What do we do, though, with Douglas County Contractors Association and also State versus Boyd? How do we distinguish?
Douglas County Contractors Association was clear the difference. They were discussing the difference between a tax and a regulatory fee. Douglas County wanted to impose an impact fee on development subdivisions that were being built. Douglas County tried to call it a regulatory fee, that they were regulating applications for subdivision development, but in fact it was a revenue generating measure. It was a tax. Douglas County, like the Lingle case from Hawaii, didn't involve reasonable utility charges. That's what makes this case different from Douglas County.
Is this not a tax?
This is not a tax. And that's what distinguishes this from Boyd as
not,
well.
Not the first taking, but the second taking.
The second taking is not a tax.
What is it then?
It's the state taking the property of a municipal utility and transferring to the state general fund. And the reason the state can do it is because the state has sovereign control of all municipal utilities. This is not very different from the Washoe County airport case.
What about State versus Boyd, though, as we go a little further into it?
State versus Boyd, once again, if you look at the statute there, 1903 Nevada statutes, at pages 189 and 190, it says that the city of Reno can impose a license tax. And the court struck down the part of the statute that allowed part of the tax to be distributed to the state. We're not disagreeing with Boyd as binding precedent in the state. It involved the transfer of tax. This is not tax money. In the city of Reno versus Washoe County case,
aren't we asking, though, the residents of Clark to contribute for other residents of the state?
If they were paying tax, that would be an issue. They were provided with utility.
I understand what you're calling it, but isn't it, in essence, a tax?
It's not. They were provided with utility service at a certain cost, which cost could exceed the cost of providing the service. And that surplus is now part of municipal property, and the state can seize that municipal property. In the Washoe County Airport case, the state took the city of Reno's airport and gave it to a regional airport authority. The city of Reno's taxpayers paid for that airport, but the state was able to take it and transfer it to the Washoe County Regional Airport Authority because it was municipal property subject to the sovereign control of the state.
So, Mr. Powers, to follow up on the chief's question, when these kinds of cases arise, this court should focus its attention on how the entity itself characterized the revenue source in deciding whether the funds can be swept. Had the Clean Water Coalition characterized the charges as a tax, then you wouldn't have been able to reach it.
We don't look to how it's characterized by the entity. We look to how it's characterized by the law. The CWC couldn't call this a tax because they don't have the power to tax. There's no statute that gives the CWC the power to tax. There are statutes, however, and charter provisions in each of the member agencies' charters that gives them the power to impose utility charges for providing utility service. What we've pled this case three times now, and not once in the briefing has the CWC or utility customers cited a single statute or city charter provision that authorizes the CWC to collect these fees. The reason they haven't cited that is because the only authority that authorizes the CWC and its member agencies to collect these fees are charter and statutory provisions authorizing them to collect utility charges. So it's not the entity that characterizes it, it's the law. The legislature allowed these utility charges to be collected, but now the legislature, because this is municipal property, can take it.
So what if the M Resort says, and we the judge certified this under 54B, but as you know, originally this court requested the district court to evaluate this before coming back up here, and now it's come up again without discovery. What if the M Resort says, well, wait a minute, the Clean Water Coalition charged us money, and as you have pointed out, they never had authority to do so. We want our money back. Well, does the state have a right to sweep money that the Clean Water Coalition improvidently secured from these folks?
The Clean Water Coalition had the authority to take the money, but they only had the authority through the reasonable utility charge statutes. The city charters and the statutes that authorize them to take the money authorizes them to impose utility charges. That establishes that these are utility charges. The CWC didn't improvidently charge this money. They charged it under the utility authority of the member agencies. And that's why it's not taxation, and Boyd doesn't apply, and Douglas County doesn't apply, and the Hawaii case doesn't apply.
So the legislature creates these entities that are capable of raising funds in the way you outline, and then the legislature can take the funds, but nobody will call that a tax? Is that your argument?
Because the customers are receiving utility service, it's like as a private company was providing the utility service to a certain degree. The customers pay money to receive utility service, and that money becomes the property of the utility provider. And this is what happened here. These utilities provided service, they got payment in exchange, and now the legislature, because this is municipal property, can take it. And I want to emphasize, this was a policy decision made by the legislature. It wasn't an easy one. It was a difficult one. But in the end, it was a policy decision.
Well, it's a policy decision, but let's come back to one of the earlier questions. This is a special taking. It's not a general taking. Is that appropriate?
Under the exceptions that this court has recognized, and that is the emergency circumstances or the unique situation circumstances.
Is this an emergency circumstance if we go back to, as Justice Hardesty was pointing out, the state of Indiana where we've borrowed the statute from in our provisions, if we look at how it was originally intended to apply?
And if you look at the constitutional debates that Justice Hardesty mentioned, it's clear that if the framers had wanted to prohibit the legislature from passing special and local laws, they could have put a flat-out prohibition in the Constitution. They didn't. They were by putting in Article 4, Section 21, it was clear that there were going to be circumstances where a special law was necessary to address special circumstances. And therefore, this is one of the situations, based on the case law from the court, where special circumstance justified the special legislation.
Why couldn't a general law have been made applicable here?
Because it would not serve the best interests of the people. If you look at the Evans case, the Hess versus Pegg case, the court stated that if the legislature determines that a general law would not best serve the interests of the people, that a special law could be enacted.
Well, doesn't a general law, wouldn't that be a broader base for you to gather money?
Possibly, but in this case, the CWC was unique from most local political subdivisions. It had excess money that it was not going to use to meet its ongoing obligations. It was a class of one. There is no other organization or political entity that was similar to the CWC during the special session.
It was very special.
It was, and because it was a class of one, it applies only to that class of one. There's
Mr.
nothing.
Powers, as I raised with Mr. Keeley, In all of the jurisprudence of this court that I can see, going back to 1868, the special circumstance that the court has been talking about has been a special circumstance of the locale, not a special circumstance of the state. Do you see a difference in our jurisprudence and what we've recognized versus what happened in this case?
I think that's true of those cases, but I don't think they're limited to that degree. I think the thread that runs through the cases you're talking about is the special law was necessary to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. Whether it be the public hospital in Cobble versus Beamer, the flood control facilities in Washoe County Water Conservation District, those types of cases involve the public health, safety, and welfare. This budget deficit was going to harm the state's ability to provide necessary services to the elderly, the poor. It was potentially going to close prisons, affect public safety.
But wouldn't that, though, be an exception that completely engulfs the rule? Any time on a statewide level you have a budgetary crisis, you could reach down to a locale? I mean, I'm concerned about the limits on the exception as you envision it.
And I think it would be limited by the facts of the case. First and foremost, like I said, this involved reasonable utility charge, not location.
No, but going to the emergency exception that you're trying to get to, how would you articulate the one you just set out for me that would apply generally?
I think you have to look at the nature of the circumstances. This was not your average budget issue, a budget deficit, or a budget crisis. This was unprecedented in the state of Nevada. It was an extraordinary, extreme circumstance that required an extraordinary and extreme response. The budget deficit was facing $800 million. The state had never faced a budget deficit of that size. And going into this session, as you know, we're facing a $3 billion budget deficit. Clearly, we're facing extreme, extraordinary circumstances that require an extraordinary response, oftentimes through special legislation. So I think the nature of these circumstances limits the scope of the case. And how
Mr. Powers, I'd like to ask you the question I also asked Mr. Keeley. In looking at various cases that have a similar Section 21 throughout the country, Indiana, Florida, Oklahoma, I don't find any other state that has adopted this sort of emergency or special circumstance rule. Do you know of any?
I do not, Your Honor. But again, I believe the reason for the rule is that the framers believed special and local legislation would be necessary under special circumstances, extreme circumstances, unique circumstances. If the framers had intended to prohibit special and local laws, they could have simply done a flat-out prohibition in the Constitution. They didn't, and this type of legislation, because of the extreme circumstances, meets the requirements for passing a special and local law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Chief, I had some concern about this issue of the utility fee classification versus tax classification. So perhaps if we could get a very brief response to that, I would appreciate that. However you feel is appropriate and time-wise. So.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was so eager to respond to that. The fact of the matter is that there is another category, and it's called user fees. And if you read the Medeiros case in Hawaii, the state of Hawaii versus Medeiros, it articulates that these types of fees, providing wastewater treatment services, is a user fee. The reasonable utility charges is really a red herring argument in this case. It's based upon cases from, when he talks about the wide case law, we went back to Ohio for a 1938 case that has been disparaged by the New Mexico Supreme Court. When it overruled itself in the Morningstar versus, in the Morningstar case versus the Farming House School District, they overruled the portion of Apodaca that's important. And Apodaca, what the state is talking about is adopting this fiction that at some point in time, the utility is a private enterprise and no longer a governmental entity. But that goes contrary to Nevada law. And it goes contrary to the case that overruled Apodaca, upon which they rely and upon which Apodaca relied upon the Ohio case, City of Niles versus Union Ice Company. The Clean Water Coalition never stops being a political subdivision, and because it never stops being a political subdivision, it is subject to constitutional limitations. Therefore, we can't take user fees, which are different than utility charges. That's a different theory. It is different from regulatory fees, and the Hawaii court distinguishes between regulatory and user fees, but the Medeiros case is very poignant. So if you take those user fees that were obtained for the sake of providing a service and you throw them into the state level general fund, you've just converted it to a tax. AB 6 is a tax. It raises general revenue. It says nothing about fees, regulatory fees, utility charges. It simply directs that monies be taken for the general revenue. So the Morningstar case is a beautifully written opinion that points out the absurdity of the governmental proprietary doctrine, and it really puts it to rest. So this reasonable utility charges as a way around Boyd and as a way around the tax is really not a valid argument.
Any additional questions? With that, the court thanks the parties for their arguments this day. This is a matter of major import to the residents of the state of Nevada. With that, this matter will stand submitted.